Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Kia ora. Welcome to the Kiwi Birth Tales podcast, and thanks for tuning in this week. I'm your host, Jordan. I'm a mum of one, soon to be two boys, and a lover of all things birth, and a very passionate storyteller. The goal of Kiwi Birth Tales is to empower, inform, educate and connect families from New Zealand and all over the world, talking about the things that are so often kept to ourselves or shared with only our nearest and dearest because of this taboo that seems to surround sharing stories about birth. All stories deserve to be heard, no story more important than the other, and with this podcast you'll get a variety without bias. The podcast is not intended for medical advice. I'm not an advocate for any particular mode of birth or birth care, and this platform is simply here to share these beautiful, empowering Kiwi Birth Tales with you all. So I hope you enjoy. In this bonus episode of Kiwi Birth Tales, I speak with Morgan Penn, and Morgan is a somatic sexologist, and you're about to find out exactly what that means in this episode. But we discuss all things postpartum intimacy. We talk about what postpartum intimacy even means and how we maybe need to reframe what sex is after having children, and that things are different over different periods of time. Morgan has some really awesome tips, and we answer some questions that came through on the Kiwi Birth Tales Instagram when I asked you for some questions or suggestions on topics to talk about. So I just think that this is a super important episode, and I look forward to bringing you these professional episodes as much as possible, because I just think there's so much value to gain in what Morgan has to share with us. So let's jump into the episode. I hope you enjoy it, and I'd love to hear your feedback. If you want to send me an email, kiwibirthtales@gmail.com, or a message on Instagram @kiwibirthtales. Enjoy. Hi, Morgan. Thanks so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. It's a real pleasure to be here.
No problem. Would you like to tell the listeners a little bit about you and what it is that you do, and yeah, maybe a little bit about what we'll be chatting about today?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Morgan Penn, and I'm a somatic sexologist, which means I help people have better sex, really, whether that's with themselves or with other people. And the somatic side of it is working with the body. Yeah. And this is really important to me because, you know, sex is something that happens in the mind and in the body. And so we have to really integrate it to be having good sex. And I'm just really passionate about supporting women's bodies, especially because, you know, we've kind of, because of the way that the society is structured, pleasure has always been focused around men's pleasure, and a lot of our sex education falls into fear around pregnancy and STIs instead of pleasure. And you know, and then I think it's a taboo subject, right? Just sex as a whole, but almost even more so when it comes to like pregnancy or postpartum. It's like there's this secret club, you know, that people have got lots of shame around. And I'm so passionate about breaking those taboos, normalizing these conversations, and helping people connect to their bodies.
Yeah. Yeah, amazing. No, I am 100% on board with that, so I can't wait to jump into it. Do you sort of want to give us a bit of an idea, I guess, before we, I've got a list of questions that listeners submitted on the Kiwi Birth Tales Instagram. So before we jump into those, I thought maybe we could just chat about whether or not it's actually normal for your sex drive or libido to sort of change throughout pregnancy and postpartum, or just throughout our lives in general. Is that something that's pretty normal? And what happens there?
Yeah, it is so normal. And I think this is the thing. People freak out like, oh my God, I used to be this wild Brumby in the sack and wanted all the time, you know, and then something's happened, or yeah, there's been birth, or and it is so normal. We fluctuate. And you think about, say, like the fashion we liked when we were 18, as opposed to what we like now, you know, it's completely different, and it's okay. We change and we adapt and we grow and we evolve. And it's the exact same thing with our arousal levels. And I mean, so many things affect what happens in terms of arousal and libido in the body, whether that's hormones. You know, the biggest thing that I see that will probably affect it is cortisol, you know, is the stress hormone sitting in the body. And I think what we don't get taught, because of things like Instagram showing us like these sexy mamas that are straight back in with these flat tummies and smooching up their partners, is that we need to really connect into our truth of what our body needs and wants. And we are like really primal beings. And the thing is, like, really those primal urges for having sex is to procreate and have another baby or a baby.
Yeah.
And so really, if we've just done that, the body's like, good, I can relax and chill for a bit here. So actually the arousal in the body just most of the time will not be there. And I think the big key piece here of work for everybody, every human, but especially mothers, is that our body is going to change, and we need to just accept it for what it's going through at different times. And the more we can sit in that space of acceptance, the more we get comfortable with it, the more we're not forcing or fighting or judging what's happening, the more space we're giving it to really feel, and then it can shift. But if we force and sit like, I can't believe I'm not horny anymore, or like, what's wrong with me? It just like keeps us in this loop, and we stay there for a lot longer than what we need to, instead of going, yeah, okay, so this is what my body's experiencing at the moment. What are my body needs? You know, where can I tend to myself and give myself more love and more acceptance and more space, and then things will shift and change.
Yeah, yeah, and that's so interesting. And I think like the sort of part that you said about mother, like being a mother and having a baby being the, you know, the sort of primal urge to procreate, I can imagine it's really different as well for males and females, because, you know, we've procreated, been pregnant, made a baby, given birth, and have all these hormonal shifts throughout that time. And maybe slightly different for men, because they do the deed of having the sex, but then don't have all of that, you know, all of the same processes to go through afterwards. So it can, I can sort of relate to the disconnect that might be felt between couples postpartum, where maybe the mum just has no sex drive at all, but the partner or dad might feel the opposite.
Absolutely. And, you know, when we, because we are here talking about this primal, like old school kind of stuff, is like, yeah, he's sown his seed, right? And he's seen like, yes, I can do this. And, you know, then that primal brain is like, oh, I want to go and do it again and again, like spread that wild seed. And and so this is where like communication needs to come in. This is where understanding, this is where personal responsibility for our own pleasure needs to really come in as well. And I think men can feel really lost at this time, you know, because you're so right that their arousal, their urges, I mean, they're probably lacking a lot of sleep, so there is potential that their libido is going to go down as well with a new baby. But yeah, it is about like, just because one partner is going through something does not mean the other partner has to, you know, pump the brakes on their own pleasure or arousal, you know.
Yeah. And I think that's a really good point. It's so interesting that you say that, because I think like accepting that our partners can have pleasure without us is a really important just process, I guess, to go through. As in, I remember, just to give a personal example, I remember postpartum with my first son, I almost felt like, oh, I'm not doing like my job as a partner if my partner needs to masturbate, when I've sort of come completely full circle with that. And I'm like, if he wants to masturbate, then that's totally up to him. His pleasure is his pleasure, and he can do what he needs to sort of fulfill that. So I think it's just a really interesting mindset.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, and I love that you've shared that because I think it's so important. I think we can place judgment, even on a partner when, we can be feeling we so that's so far from what we could even want for our bodies. But like, how dare you, But it's like, no, celebrate them, But yeah, tell them to get to the other bedroom or, in the shower or whatever. Or, what I do say is like, if you're still looking for that deep connection and intimacy, which I think is so important, is you can still do things like if there's one partner playing in the bed, and you can still be there to look or to support or to hold or kiss or there can still be, I think we almost need to reframe the term sex or what sex actually means, when we're talking about postpartum.
No, totally agree with that. Awesome. So let's jump into some of these questions. Otherwise, I'll just be talking about myself all day. So the first one that came in is around communication. How do I communicate and set boundaries together with my partner for postpartum sex, and what that might look like?
Yeah, so I really like this, and I think what a question like this tells me is like how important communication is in relationships, like right from the get-go, because if you have got a good foundation of open, hearty communication for anything in the relationship, then this chat should be quite easy. But I guess what's happening in this moment is that there's a whole new body that's sitting on the table ready to go into some sex again, feeling ready, And so I think what needs to happen with that communication is being really, really honest. Like this is where radical honesty needs to come in, talking through all this person's fears and insecurities, because yes, that body has changed a lot, And there's such a piece of sexual identity once people have had babies, of who they are in their sexual body now. And so I guess like even like reversing a bit is like I would recommend learning what your boundaries are with yourself sexually first. So whether that's you start touching and exploring your body first, masturbating, self-pleasuring, to see what your new body actually likes, because it can wake up different parts after a baby that you didn't even know were an erogenous zone. Yeah. You're giggling? Can you relate?
Oh, I just remember feeling like I didn't even give birth vaginally with Jai the first time. I had a C-section, but I remember feeling like just so different. Like different things turned me on and different things felt good. And yeah, I just think I can just really relate with what you're saying.
Yeah, so it is about this, like it's quite a beautiful thing because you get to almost start fresh. You can bring in this curiosity, and what I would say is just go so slow, So really this communication around boundaries and stuff is just to have that honest chat, share the fears, insecurities, share your needs and desires if you've actually gotten to that point, because that's really key. And yeah, I think if you can both just explore, be curious, and go really slow, and know that once you start, you don't have to keep going. You can stop, you can change tact if it doesn't feel right. It's really about honoring the body the most and tapping into the body wisdom at this point. And if you've got a safe partner, a partner that you feel really safe and open with, like they will be on that journey with you, I'm sure.
And I guess like in terms of when you're having that conversation, it's probably really a great idea to start that in pregnancy, right? Like even our arousal and body feels different during pregnancy too. So I'd imagine that would be a really great time to start.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Like your body's changing, and it's a good time within that to set your new boundaries. And I think with boundaries, when your body is changing so much, just knowing that there can be fluidity within it. So, you know, it's just like a consent piece, really. Like you can say no to one thing, yes to another, but that may change the next day, you know? So it's about this, the communication needs to be rolling so that it can change tact at different times and be open to try different things as well, because one day might feel really good, the next day it's like, don't you freaking go near my nipples, you know?
Yeah, 100%. Cool. The next question that came in is it normal to lose sex drive after a baby? I have absolutely no interest and I'm 6 months on.
Yeah, I mean, we'd sort of, you know, and this is a big question, right? And and so many people ask this of me, a lot of clients. And yes, it is. And I'd be curious to know if this person was still breastfeeding, because quite often when we're breastfeeding, then there's, the body knows that the baby is still being tended to. So it goes back to that conversation about sort of those primal urges. The body knows it's just had a baby if you're still breastfeeding, you know? So, and you are nurturing and feeding, and that's the body's main job, right? Is still to feed this baby. Yeah. So there's not actually that much capacity for arousal that's happening at this time. But also I think one of the biggest things, and you know, it's interesting, they've said 6 months on. It's like, you know, because we get told, oh, about 6 weeks after you should be good to go. Like, what a crock of shit, you know?
Yeah.
It's really, and it's different for everybody, right? Sure, some people might be ready to go, but there is no time frame for this. And the body is so interesting. It's got its own wisdom and it will tell you. You know, and it's gone quite often. There's birth trauma and shock. It's like the body, you know, sometimes doesn't really realize what's happened, and it's almost like it needs to catch up. And so I think for things like this, if somebody is concerned that they don't have their sex drive back after a baby, after 6 months sort of on, you start warming and waking your body up, just to see what's alive there, to see if you can find some arousal. So I would recommend really slow, curious touches on your erogenous zones. Like you could even spend 5 minutes slowly stroking, you know, your inner wrist, you know, while you're sitting there, like watching the baby sleep, you know, and just see what you can feel. You know, can you bring your nails in and scratch a little bit and see if that feels more tantalizing? Or, you know, can you feel something peak in your body that feels like pleasure? So it's about finding the little things, because we quite often think, oh God, you know, we need big things and we need orgasms and we need all this kind of stuff, but it's not. We need to start really small again and seeing where we can find little bits in our body that just feels good. And then once we found something, we follow the pleasure and we allow it to grow.
Amazing. I love that. It's like sex feels like this huge mountain, right, that you just have to, like, I think you've mentioned it, like the societal sort of pressure is that you have to get right to the top of this mountain at 6 weeks postpartum. And I think it's really, really important that we understand that actually that's not the case. And it might feel right for some people, but for others, it's, can be a really slow journey, and that is totally fine.
Yes. Because the biggest thing that is going to keep libido killed is pressure. You know, like that is the worst. So it really is about patience and kindness and tenderness to what the body's been through, and awe. We should be in awe of this body, you know, like, my God, it's brought life into this world.
Yeah, no, 100%. Awesome. So I think you've probably answered the next question, but what about any tips that you have? So if you feel ready to sort of get back into being intimate with your partner, do you have any tips on where to start? And if somebody's really nervous, what advice would you give them?
So if they're nervous, that means that the whole body is probably feeling uneasy, and it's about sex is always about safety, to be honest. Like, to have really good sex, we need safe enough to let go. So it's about creating a new base layer of safety. And so again, it's slow. Like, everything should be so, so slow. And I guess, like, this is a really simple exercise, but just cultivating that intimacy with your partner. So eye gazing is a really like simple but easy way to really connect, holding that gaze. You can sit in front of each other, you can place a hand on each other's heart space, you know, see if you can feel that heartbeat, breathe together, see if you can align your breaths. This is like really, really easy stuff, but it will really change things. Like, if you do that for five minutes before you start actually exploring each other's bodies, you're going to notice like a deep connection, safety, trust, and yeah, and then you can kind of move forward from there. And I think the thing is, with anything, if you're nervous, then it is about communication, right? And sometimes people don't have this communication skill because we're not taught it. It's not, you know, something that really does come natural to us. So, you know, finding out in your relationship what works. So is it like a traffic light system of like, okay, red, so it just means stop, you know, orange, or can you slow down a bit or just pause? Or like green, like, this is feeling good, green, you know? We just need to work out within our own little unit how we're going to communicate, because the worst thing that you can do for your body postpartum when you're starting to have sex again is to endure. And I think a lot of people do this for their partner. And that is the worst thing that you can do, because your body doesn't understand why it's giving you signals like anxiety, like that nervousness in the tummy, or pain. That's a huge one that I see with my clients. And we're overriding them, and the body's like, huh, like, I'm sending you some pretty clear messages here that I don't feel good right now. So when we override it, it confuses our pleasure centers, and then it will create more of it, because it's not, we're not listening to it, and then it's going to take longer to overcome things or to feel safe. Well, you're definitely not creating safety in the body if you're overriding and enduring.
No, that makes total sense. Cool. The next question that came through is, I have a prolapse. Will sex ever stop feeling uncomfortable?
Yeah, so this isn't my area of expertise, but what I do know about prolapses is that they are definitely fixable. And so, yes, I really believe that pain-free sex is what we should all be having, and we can definitely get to that point. This person needs some really like skilled hands-on body worker. But also, this person can do a lot of their own healing. And I think this is a big part. It's like, as society, we're not taught how to have a really good relationship with our own vaginas. You know, we're like grossed out when we bleed each month, and you know, we don't get used to just like putting our fingers in there and giving ourselves a massage to like relax those muscles. They're just like the muscles in our shoulder, you know, that hold tension. And as women, we're receptacles, you know, because we hold all that stress in there. And so we need to start touching ourselves, giving ourselves womb massages. And when we can do that, we help all those organs in there align and get back into a natural space. So yes, I absolutely do believe that if with the right help and with your own body connection, you can definitely get to a place where sex will be great and not uncomfortable.
This person has asked, are there best positions for less painful sex after a baby?
Yes. Well, I mean, it depends, right? It depends where this person is hurting after a baby, or if it's been a C-section or a vaginal birth. But I guess what I recommend is like ones that we're not like on the belly. And, you know, so like the spooning position is quite good with the person from behind entering into the vagina. I think things like getting on top, so like reverse missionary, is great for the control. So that the vagina owner can, you know, really control the depth of what's going inside and the actual motion, you know. And I think that's really a good part of safety, you know, when we're talking about promoting the safety again. If you've got the control, then that's going to help build confidence in that. And I think it's, again, like in terms of the positions, it's like it's more the communication. So throughout, you're actually saying, oh, actually, that doesn't feel good. Let's try this. Or moving, you know, into different things, or stopping or pausing, or, you know, or even like I said, do we need to redefine sex
after
postpartum so that it's not about penetrative sex, you know? Is it about, you know, fingers or oral, or just bringing in toys, or so it's I don't know, it's one of those things. I think it's so different for everybody, and it's just about knowing where you might be experiencing some discomfort and avoiding triggering those parts off.
Awesome. Now, I think this question probably came through like at least 20 times when I asked for them. So how do I get the spark back with my partner after years together and a couple of kids? I feel like we're just friends who parent together and live in the same household.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I hear this a lot as well, so I'm not surprised. Yeah, look, I think it's totally doable. That's what I will say, because I have people that come to me and they're like, oh my God, is this possible? Like, have we totally lost it? And I'm like, no. And the thing is, if you've had it before, you can do it again. So when we talk about like good sex and stuff like that, we want to look at the context around when you have, in a time of your life, had really good sex, or you've felt a lot of arousal or desire in your body. And if we can both, like with two partners, if you can share with each other like a time where you felt the most sexiest, or that you think you had the hottest sex, share that with each other. It's going to bring back body feelings of that memory, and it's going to kind of bring it back to life. And then you need to work out the context around it. What made it so good? You know, where were you? What were there probably no stresses, no kids, you know? And it's like, okay, so what's the reality you're living in now? And what aspects of that context can you bring into now, you know? Was it that, it was in the back of a car? Well, can you have a weekend without the kids and go and do that somewhere, you know? It's so funny. Like, we get into routines and we put children first, which is fantastic and fine for, you know, whatever's working in your relationship. But when we're looking at the spark, we need to go back to when we first got that spark, when that fire was first lit, and remember what that feels like, because we forget. And at that early stages, you know, we're making an effort for ourselves, for that other person. So what you can even do is like plan a date night and you get ready by yourselves. You don't, you know, for that day, I recommend not touching each other, because we quite often touch partners in a very unconscious way. It's like a tap on the butt.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm here, or a shoulder touch or something. And if we just know that we're not allowed to touch them for a day, it becomes this really like, oh, weird. I sort of thought they were mine to just touch willy-nilly. And then you kind of get excited about, oh, I might actually like to touch them, you know? Mm. So if you take that off the table for a day, you get ready for your date separately, and then you come together and you have your date and you act as if like you are young again. Mm. And you are in the very early stages of dating. And I think another key piece of the spark is that we think that we know everything about our partner, right, after a few years.
Yeah,
but we don't. And it's about bringing in this curiosity again, like you do when you first start dating someone. You know, you don't, it's a stranger. So start asking your partner different questions about them, about their childhood, about random things like their views on, I don't know, elevators. You know, you can get seriously strange with this stuff. And I think that, yeah, that can bring the spark, like learn new things, because it's like, oh, that's so intriguing. That's so different. Mm-hmm. And then once you kind of got that going on again, then you can really move to the sexy stuff again.
Yeah.
And whether or not that's like, well, what do we want to try? What have we never tried? And I always say a really good exercise is to each, like, get some post-it notes, two different colors, and write on different post-it notes a different desire or something you would like to try. And then you both put them into a jar. And then say if you dedicate like one night a week to date night, then you go into the jar and you pull out the opposite color that you've put in of your partner's, and you read it out and you go, oh, okay, this is what you wanted. Okay. And sometimes that's easier, right, than having a conversation divulging that you've got this like secret foot fetish that you've never shared about.
Yeah.
And then you can both discuss, okay, well, do we feel comfortable in doing this? Shall we try this?
Mm.
And then you can, yeah, try something new together.
Yeah. I love that idea. I think that's such a cool, cool way to sort of reconnect and like learn something about one another that you might not have known before. And yeah, even if you've been together for a really long time, I think that's really nice.
Yeah. And it's fun, you know, and I think we're so serious about sex. We have to bring the fun into it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Awesome. This person has said, I had a traumatic birth and now I have absolutely no sex drive. How can I overcome this? So there were quite a few questions about regaining or refinding sex drive after a traumatic birth that came through.
Yeah. I mean, it makes me pretty sad. It shows like the state of the nation with what's happening with our birthing bodies. And so I think, like it's quite often, like I mentioned, there's a shock in the body.
Mm.
It's a bit like, doesn't know how to, it needs safety again. It comes back to the safety. And so real gentle touch with yourself again. And this doesn't have to be sexual. This can be like a nurturing touch of cupping your face, stroking your arms, squeezing your arms together like you're hugging, you know, holding your belly that was, you know, and feeling into where that baby grew.
Mm.
And if there's a scar there from a C-section, really honoring that scar. And so part of my work is I do hands-on body work, and so I do scar remediation for C-section scars. And what I do find is that if a C-section has happened, quite often there's a real disconnect with the body around knowing that it's actually had a baby.
Mm.
Because it's like, it knows, it's got its innate wisdom that babies should, and I hate to use that kind of should, but, you know, come through the cervix, out the birth canal, and then it's out that way. You know, it can't really comprehend why it's now got this painful scar on its belly. And so cognitively we know that, but it's about the body catching up. So if there's a C-section, it needs to have this full deep presence and reverence for the body. And so spending time with that scar, seeing if there's emotion sitting there, and really allowing whatever trauma is to come out of them.
Mm.
And it is easier sometimes if you have someone to facilitate that, you know, which is why I offer those kind of services, because sometimes we just need someone to hold that space, safety, touch. And then say if it's traumatic, feeling traumatic from a vaginal birth, that needs to be really, really checked in on and honored, and to see if there's pain, because I work with a lot of clients who have secondary vaginismus because of traumatic birth,
mm-hmm.
or just birth in general. And I think that society doesn't really encourage us to seek help for traumatic birth. It's just like, oh God, I've got a traumatic birth story. And then, you know, it's like, this is a fucking huge thing for the body to go through. And if we do not really honor and look at and acknowledge the bigness that the body's been through, we get stuck in a cycle. And when we look at vaginismus, that's a 90% psychological, they call it a disorder. I would never call it that, thing that's happening to the body, because the body's talking to us. Like, the vagina is closed for business because it doesn't want anything in there anymore because it's had a fright.
That's when your vagina is like super tight, right? Is that right?
So vaginismus is when the pelvic floor muscles pretty much like tense up and they just go so tight that the body and the mind have got no control over them. So it means that there can be excruciating pain on trying to like put anything inside, and it can feel like hitting a wall.
Mm-hmm.
But for example, I've got a vaginismus client who had a C-section, but they dilated her, and she thought she was going to have a vaginal birth, but they didn't. But she acquired like a micro tear in her vagina a few months later, out of nowhere, and the medical professionals have not been able to make sense of it. They're like, well, this is weird. Okay, off you go. Mm-hmm. And she finally found me, and I was like, okay, let's have a look what's going on here. And I was like, your body has not been able to make sense of what's happened. And the thing is with vaginismus, because it is a big piece that's psychological, you know, and then the body actually like represents pain, right? If we can't acknowledge it will physically manifest in aches and ailments and all sorts of stuff. So she's on a deep journey of connecting with her body now and actually dropping into the bigness that happened with that birth and the trauma that she was like not expecting, and it's healing, you know. It's just like, we just need to be with the body. We need to stay with it. We need to connect, and we need to acknowledge the bigness of what happens during birth.
Totally. Okay, cool. And this question is around a partner not being ready. So I'm ready for sex, but my hubby isn't. I'm 9 months postpartum. How can I get him in the mood?
Oh, yeah, this is so interesting. And I think we forget about, you know, partners. And, you know, it's kind of like what we were talking about earlier about pleasure and still self-pleasuring. And we kind of, especially, you know, this is a hubby, but we also kind of think for men, like, they should be rearing to go when we are. But that's just not true either. And men's emotions are really tied to arousal and erections. And so I would be, having some really hearty chats with your partner around what is he experiencing? Has he got some fears? This is going to be a pretty vulnerable chat. He may not even know, and it could be quite good to, you know, go to a sex therapist or someone like myself for something like this, because there might be something underlying there for him that just needs to be brought to the surface and unraveled, you know. It's not your job to get him in the mood. It's his job. Yeah. But in a relationship, if you are incapable of having those chats, or you've had chats and you're still stuck, or you're at a crossroads, like, do not hesitate to get help, You know, a third party can literally zoom out, Google Maps, have a really good look, the lay of the land, and then pinpoint, you know, where you can start moving forward.
Awesome. Cool. How do I go from feeling touched out by my baby to then getting turned on by touching with my partner? I think this was a really common one too.
Yeah, that's so hard. I totally get it. Yeah, so I guess what I'm hearing here is the touched out. You know, it's like you're giving, baby is taking, and then it can feel like that with a partner, like they want to take more. So what do you need? Do you need to be given to, you know? Do you need to receive massages, foot rubs? Just you start receiving pleasure, you know? I think there is a time in our relationships, it doesn't have to be mutual all the time, you know? It really can be a giving. And if the more that you are able to receive when you are giving to a baby, the better that you're going to feel in your body, because yes, you can feel so depleted. And I think actually, again, this is almost like a psychological thing. You feel like you're giving so much, but we've always got capacity for more. But if you feel like if you've got a story running that all I do is give, all that happens is I get taken from, you're stuck, you know, you're in a vicious loop. So I think receiving is so important, and being able to say those needs to your partner. But I know this is hard because people are so tired and exhausted, but like giving yourself those touches, loving touches, is going to help wake up your body into a, you know, back into a sexual body as well. And I think some people don't realize that it can all cohabitate, right? You can be a mum and be nurturing a baby with those breasts, and you can still be a sexual person as well. And you can, you know, you can get aroused by those same breasts for some people. It can all live in one, you know, it doesn't have to be one or the other, but only if you truly feel like that. But, you know, you can do different kind of sexy things without touching as well. You know, if you feel like you just can't, that's the last thing that you want, is, you know, you don't have to touch. You can bring in feathers. You can, you know, there's all sorts of things that you can play with.
That sort of leads into another question that was a little bit later on. How do I make my boobs feel sexy again when I'm breastfeeding? Which I think is just like such an interesting concept, right?
Yes, it really is. I think, you know, women's journeys with their breasts as a whole is so fascinating because, you know, 1 minute we're a kid and we're running around carefree with our top off. The next we've got these little rosebuds popping. And, oh, God, mum's buying us a trainer bra or, you know, all of a sudden close that off from society and don't let, you know, you can't have baths with your brother anymore. I mean, it's just bullshit. But, you know, and then we don't even get the choice as we grow up whether boobs are sexualized or not, you know, because actually boobs are just boobs. They are just fatty tissue that are there, you know, on a very physiological, biological level to breastfeed. You know, and then, you know, so it is about us choosing whether we want them to be of a sexual function or not. And I think this is the important part here, like from this question, is how do you, you know, bring the sex back to them? And so a bit of work that I do with some of my clients is like a reclamation of those breasts, because kind of like, the other question of like, you give so much, is like, what is yours? You know, what is yours? What is your baby's? What is your partner's? Your breasts are yours. And so breast massage is huge for this reclamation piece of looking in the mirror, touching them tenderly, massaging, connecting in, looking at them, how they look now. And I think it comes back to that acceptance piece. And looking at them with curiosity, like, wow, they look different now. Wow, they've like, you know, bring in that awe. Wow, you've fed a baby or you've just changed because of pregnancy. And then seeing if you can wake them up in a sexual way, you know, just by that sort of massage and touch. And like that massage doesn't have to be sexual, but for this person that's wanting to see if they can kind of shift it into a sexual place. It's definitely doable, but you just have to almost touch them differently to how they are being touched during breastfeeding. It's almost like the brain needs to see quite a different pathway.
That makes total sense. Thank you. Cool. I find it harder to climax after birth. Is this normal?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everything's changed and shifted, and what may have worked before sometimes doesn't. So it's about finding new ways So I guess I'd be curious to know how this person used to climax and what their kind of go-to was, because, you know, we can get a lot of cues from that. And you can, and I would really think that you can do that again. It is just about kind of strengthening a new neural pathway for that pleasure center. And sometimes, you know, we get so fixated on an orgasm or the climax, instead of really just enjoying pleasure in the body. And I think if you really just follow the pleasure and take away that pressure of the climax, like I said, you know, arousal hates pressure. If you just follow and relax in and enjoy, you're so much more likely to reach that orgasmic place without trying.
Awesome. Do I have to wait the 6 weeks, or is this just a recommendation? So if I've had a baby and I feel like I want to have sex again before 6 weeks, what does that look like?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is just a recommendation. Nobody knows your body better than you, you know. There is heightened risk of infection and stuff if it's very close after birth, because everything is a lot more tender and raw, and there could be all sorts going on in there. So, you know, just really listen to your own body and really honor that. And if you are worried, then let's redefine sex again. And maybe it's not about penetrative sex, maybe it's about other stuff. You know, you can definitely get a lot of pleasure from alternative things than penetrative sex.
Okay, cool. Now, this question I just think is like, we learn these things as we like grow up and whatever, and we learn about sex, and I just think this question is just the sort of epitome of what our society is around sex. But this person is anxious that their vagina is not going to feel as nice after they've given birth, and wanting tips on how can I talk to my partner about the fact that my vagina might not feel the same anymore.
Do you think that this person is anxious about it won't feel as nice for the partner?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So I guess like my first thought there is like, sis, worry about yourself, you know. You should be, you know, if you're feeling anxious, you should be feeling that for yourself. Like, you deserve to be having really good sex, and it should be feeling good for you. But I do want to say that this feeling and this anxiety around it is totally valid, you know, because we do get kind of told by society that we won't be as, you know, have a tight pussy anymore, and it won't feel as good, and, you know, the old husband stitch joke. Which is absolutely disgusting, by the way. Is like, it's not true. Like, vaginas are so malleable and strong, and they're muscles, and you can do Kegels. And but I say that with a clause, because people need to learn how to do Kegels properly. But you can, yes, it might feel different. And so, just, it's one of those communication pieces where you need to just be so vulnerable with your partner and share that fear. And I bet you 9 times out of 10 your partner is gonna hold you and say it's okay, like, I'm sure it's gonna be amazing. And you know, and then when you feel ready, you can just try and see what it feels like. And I mean, it will feel good. Let me just tell you. Sorry, I just had a foreign call come in. I don't know if that's
okay.
Stopped. Okay. It takes time for the vagina to come back to a sort of stronger, more controlled version of itself. Yeah. It may not ever be the same again, and that's okay.
Mm.
You know, it changes, it evolves, but you can do things to help support it.
Awesome. Cool. Now I've got two questions left. The first one is, when is it no longer normal to not want sex? It's been 3 years since my birth. So I think I know we covered this a little bit earlier with the 6 months, but what about people who are sort of, you know, a good couple of years down the track and still feeling that same way?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a hard one. I never like to use that word normal at all. So it's just about what's right for you. I mean, if somebody's writing in questions like this, it feels like they must be concerned about it, you know, or they want to be having sex again. Mm. So, you know, some people go for years and years without doing it or wanting it, and like they feel fine with that. But if they do want to change it, there are definitely ways to do that. And I think getting some outside help and some support is definitely the way to go with this, because, you know, we shouldn't have to do this alone. It's a big topic. And the longer we leave it, the harder it is to get back into it. It's almost like it feels like a foreign country, and it is about coming back into connecting with the body. I would say this person's probably quite dissociated from their body, and it's about the small steps of becoming more embodied so that they've got space to feel again, really.
Awesome. And this question was the one that came through the most, so I thought I would leave it till last. Do you have any tips for loving your postpartum body? I do not feel sexy anymore.
Aww.
I know.
Yeah. So, like, I'm all about, like, self-love and stuff like that, but I also think this kind of, like, love yourself, rah-rah kind of movement that's big at the moment is a bit... it's a bit of a farce, to be honest. It's hard. It's really hard to love our bodies all the time. And so what I work with and aim for is acceptance. Because once we've got acceptance, we can move into the love. And the love comes from gratitude, really. So I think acceptance of, wow, okay, my body is different. Okay. Gratitude. Whoa, my body has grown a baby. What the holy hecka, that's incredible. And then it's about finding like bits of awe for your body. Like what can your body do now that you're like into? Can it dance sexy? You know, can you every day put on a sexy song and allow yourself to move sexy? You know, mirror work is really important for accepting the new body. So being able to really like look at it, you know, and the and when I say look at it, I'm going to invite you to bring soft eyes, because we're so quick to go in for the judgment. And every time, like studies have shown this, every time we actually look at our bodies and we have a judgment, we do release cortisol in the body. So that's the last thing our body needs, right? Our body needs love and oxytocin and you know, all that, those good stuff going on for us to love the body. But yeah, I think moving in a sexy way, mirror work, looking at ourselves with curiosity and awe, the reclamation of the body, so like the breast massage, and I would say you might not feel sexy anymore, but see what you can do to cultivate that. So self-pleasure is going to be your best friend here, because if you can give yourself pleasure in your new body, you're going to start to feel, it's just going to shift things on a cellular level. You're going to make brain connections like, oh, okay, that does feel good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we're afraid to touch ourselves because we don't feel like we want it, or our bodies are so different now, we don't feel sexy. It doesn't matter. If we can actually feel like arousal and pleasure in our bodies, things start to shift. So whilst I'm always a big advocate for honoring the body, what I do say is sometimes just start.
Hmm.
Just see if you can actually wake up your genitals and wake up your body, wake up your erogenous zones, and bring that pleasure into the body. Because the more we feel that pleasure, the more we're going to want it. So start slow, but see if you can just cultivate that essence of sexiness. And sexy dancing, I know it sounds a bit weird, but it really, really helps. And it helps with embodiment. It helps with us feeling and like kind of, you know, building that fire in the pelvic bowl, which is really vital for arousal and feeling like we're in a sexual body again.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Morgan, for sharing your knowledge and wisdom with us today. I just think, like, we don't have these conversations enough because, I don't know, it's taboo, or it has been taboo in the past, and it makes you feel like you're just so on your own and nobody else is going through the same thing, and everyone else has these wonderful sex lives where they're having heaps of sex and it feels amazing all the time, and why isn't that me? So I just, yeah, I'm super grateful that you've been able to share some of your wisdom with us today, because I just think it's so important.
Oh, well, thank you for having me, because I totally agree, and I think this is the thing, and I love that with those questions you've said, we've had a whole heap of the same thing, and you're right, because it is, people feel really alone on this journey, but it's not. We're all in the same boat. Bodies are, like, they're so complex, but they're so simple, you know, and just dropping in and acknowledging and breaking through these taboos makes such big changes. So thank you for the work you're doing.
Thank you. And if somebody wanted to work with you, how would they go about getting in touch?
Yeah, you can go to my website, morganpenn.co.nz, and then it's got a list of all my services that I do there, and I work online. So I work with people all around the world. And then obviously when we're not in any form of lockdown, I do hands-on work with vulva owners as well.
Awesome. Very cool. Well, thank you, Morgan. It was so lovely to chat with you.
See you.
Thanks so much for tuning into this bonus episode of Kiwi Birth Tales with Morgan Penn. I hope you have got something useful out of that episode. And like we said at the start, I hope if it makes you feel a little less alone and just like what you might be going through, other people are going through too. So yeah, super grateful to Morgan that she was willing to share her knowledge with us on the podcast. I hope you enjoyed it, and I look forward to bringing you more of these professional episodes.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.